Om Bhavataya Pratibodhitam Bhagavata Narayanena Swayam Vyasena Kratitam Purana Munina Madhye Mahabharatam Advaitamrita Varshinim Bhagavatim Ashtadashadhyayinim Ambatvam Anusantadhami Bhagavad Gita Bhavadveshinim. So we're on chapter 17, verse 7.
Screensaver.
No.
You saw mine either.
Want me to turn it off?
No, I like it.
Okay.
It's pretty. I've never seen it before and I didn't do it. That's odd.
It is weird.
Yeah. How could that be?
Isn't that little round thing, that rainbowy thing?
Yeah. Beautiful.
Well, that drove me crazy when she was gone.
Really?
Oh, I couldn't even use it anymore. I'm sorry, I don't want to break up the
room. Yeah, let's not worry about it.
Yeah.
I have no idea. We have to take it off because it looks like a bug.
Yeah.
Okay. It's a pretty bug. It's a pretty big bug.
A kitty did. Oh.
Ahara is twapi sarvasya. Trivito pavati priyaha. Trivito pavati priyaha. Yajñas tapas tathā dānam, teṣāṁ bedam imam śṛṇu. Āhāraḥ tu api sarvasya trividdhaḥ bhavati priyaḥ. Yajñaḥ tapaḥ tathā dānam. Tesham Vedam Imam Shrinu.
So after going through the three types of Shraddha in terms of Sattva, Rajas, and Tamas, right, he's now going to do some other ones, things that are important, looking at some other things from the standpoint, what is Sattvic, what is Rajas, and what is Tamasic about them. So he says, let's see what they are. He says, Ahāraḥ means food, eating food. Ahāraḥ, so food. Tu means whereas. Whereas, it's differentiating food, etc., from Shraddha, which we've just done. So whereas food, api can just mean and. It can mean also or and. Whereas food, trividdhaḥ bhavati priyaḥ. The food also gives three types. Trividaha is threefold. It gives three types of priya, three types of enjoyment. Okay. Ahara, food gives three types of priya. It's a rajasic, a sattvika priya. Priya means love. We love food. Food gives pleasure, right? Food gives pleasure. There's a sattvika pleasure, sattva, rajas, and tamas. So he's going to go through and tell the sattva, rajas, and tamas pleasure, priya, that these types of food give. Okay. So what is enjoyable? It'd be like, what type of food is loved and enjoyable for somebody who is sattvic? What type of food is really loved by somebody who is rajasic and similarly tamasic? So that's the first three that we're going to do. The second is yajnaḥ, rituals. Rituals themselves, also there's rituals or yajñas. Yajñas are Vedic rituals which are done with a sattvic intent, a rajasic intent, tamasic intent. So they're also threefold. Then similarly, tapas, austerities, have these three aspects, these three intentions. And also dānam, giving. So he says, for these three also, yajña, tapas, and similarly dānam, for all of them, bedam imam śrinu, listen to this difference. Listen to the difference among them. The difference is going to be in reference to this, the intent in terms of Sattva, Rajas, and Tamas. Okay, so this is just an introductory verse or what we're going to be doing for the next several verses. Okay? The reason also Shankara talks about why are we doing this? Because it's the mind that is sattva, that sattvic mind, that has shanti, that has freedom. To the degree that the mind is rajasic, it has agitation. In tamas, it has dullness and agitation. And so that's why it's kind of important to look at these things, because what we want basically is a mind that is free, a mind that is relaxed, a mind that can appreciate the universe as Ishwara, a mind that can enjoy the presence of the self. And so that mind that has that type of sattvic attitude is something that we would choose over the other two, let's put it that way. And now say the food that you eat is rajasic food, well, that's working against you. Or say the food that you eat, that you like, is very tamasic. If you realize that, okay, this kind of food is not really good for my body and mind in terms of sattva, I should avoid it. This type of food that is very rajasic, it's just agitating to the body, to the mind, I should avoid that. I should eat more foods that are more sattvic. Otherwise, I'm working against myself. That's the idea. Right? And say you're doing rituals and devotion, certain types of rituals, with an attitude which is just going to, in fact, not bless you, but in fact get you into more trouble. So let's understand, you know, how these rituals can really be a blessing and how they can also be agitating. Same with austerities, same with giving. So it's very interesting, you know, to really analyze all of this in terms of your attitudes toward the things that you do in your life. All right, so food is a big one. Shraddha is the most overarching, right? And we spent time on shraddha. But then food is very overarching, right? And then the way we worship, the way austerities we do, and dhanam, the way that our attitude toward giving to others, these are huge things. So understanding them can be really helpful. So that's the spirit of this. And Shankara talks about it, Swamiji, I believe, talks somewhat about it too in his commentary. So let's do the next verse. Now we know that what we're going to be doing. Okay? We're going to be looking at food, yajna, tapas, and dhanam, giving in reference to sattva, rajas, and tamas. So let's do the first one. The first one is going to look at food which is sattvic, which is enjoyable to people who are sattvic. So that's this. So, ayusattva balo rogya.
Ayusattva bala.
Sorry, I'm going to do it again. Ayusattva bala rogya.
Ayusattva bala rogya.
Sukapriti vivardhanaha.
Sukapriti vivardhanaha.
Rasyasnigdastira hridyaha.
Rasyasnigdastira.
Stira hridyaha.
Stira hridyaha.
Ahara sattvika priyaha. Ahara sattvika priyaha. Sorry, it's a mouthful. This first line is one compound giving a list. Ayus, ayuhu. So ayus, sattva, bala, arogya, sukha. Priti vivardhanaha, rasyaha snigdaha stiraha hridyaha aharaha sattvika priyaha. Okay. The last pada, the last quarter of the second line, aharaha sattvika priyaha. These foods, nominative plural, are enjoyed, priya. They're enjoyed by those who have a sattvic buddhi, or more sattvic. Sattvika priyaha. So these aharas, these foods, are sattvika priyaha. They're enjoyed. They're enjoyed by those people who are more sattvic. So, what type of foods are they? They're foods which, and now see the top line that ends in vivardhanaha. Vivardhana means to increase. So these foods are foods that vivardhanaha, they increase, and then we go through this list. They increase ayuhu, longevity. And sattva. Sattva means, in terms of the mind, it makes the mind more sattva, more clear. Bala, it makes you more strong. Arogya, it makes you free, frees you of disease. Sukha makes you healthy. Sukha, it gives some happiness, pleasure. This sukha is pleasure. Priti is a more aesthetic pleasure, more of a aesthetic love, It's appreciation, more of an aesthetic appreciation. So these foods increase all of these things. They are by nature rasyaha. Rasa means that which is kind of a juicy. It has a lot of rasa. It has a lot of juice. Snigdaha. Snigda means it's creamy. Foods that are creamy or more oily. Snigda. Stiraha. They're foods that are robust. It means that if you eat it, you become full and strong. Stiraha. And ridyaha. They're, you know, hrit means the heart, means they're pleasing to the heart. And they make you happy, ridyaha. So all of these foods are the type of foods that are desirable and loved by somebody who is more of a sattvic nature. And so the idea is, say you love these foods. Oh, yes. These are really the type of foods that I love. I know just what they're talking about. And yes, I feel that when I eat these foods, it really enlivens me and makes me healthy, you know, as opposed to if you eat other, you know, other types of foods that make you sick, right? But there's also some foods that you make, they're full of tejas, and they make you feel alive. And so those are sattvic foods, and people who are sattvic love those kinds of food, okay? So those are the sattvic foods. Let's look at the rajas. The more rajasic foods. This is kind of hard to chant, even for me. So, just repeat. This is again one long compound, but I'm going to break it in the middle. Gatvam lavanat yushni. Gatvam lavanat yushni. Tikshna ruksha vivadinaha. Tikshna ruksha vivadinaha. Ahara rajasasyeshtaha. Ahara rajasasyeshtaha. Dukashokamayapradaha. Dukashokamayapradaha. It says, katu, to break the sandhi, katu, amla, lavana, ati ushna, Tikshna ruksha vidahinaha. Aharaha rajasasya ishtaha. Dukha shoka amaya pradaha. Okay. Amaya, I think it is, not amaya, amaya. So here he gives a list. The basic sentence is that in the first pod of the first quarter of the second line, aharaha rajasya ishta. These foods, nominative plural, they are ishtaha. They're desired by the rajasa, by those people who are rajasic. These are the foods that are desired, that they're attracted to. And these foods that are desired, that are attracted, that the rajasic people are attracted to, are dukha shoka amaya pradaha. They are givers, pradaha. Bring this compound backwards. They are giving givers, pradaha. They give dukkha, sorrow. Shoka, sadness. dukkha and shoka and ahmeya, illness also. They make you sick. Okay? And they give different types of dukkha, sorrow and sadness. Okay? So, what are they like? Foods that are... Now, just let me just read this. I'm going to show you one little word in here. There's katu. Katu means bitter. Amla means sour. Lavana means salty. Ati means extremely.
Mm.
And Shankara says this word ati, it's an upasarga, it's a little preposition. It goes to every single one of these words. I'll explain why in a minute. So that would mean, if it goes to every one, it would go like this. Katu, extremely bitter.
Mm.
Yeah. Very, very sour. Really salty. You know, not just normal salt, really very salty. Okay, mm. Lavana.
Yeah.
Then ati ushna, very, very hot.
Like
then
chili.
Sharp, yeah, like chili. And then ati, and then tikshna, ati tikshna. Tikshna means sharp or pungent, very sharp, like sharp cheddar cheese, it's very sharp. And then ruksha is astringent, very kind of dry and astringent. Then vidahin means... it burns you. It's acidic. It burns you when you eat it.
Wow.
So he makes an interesting... Swamiji talks about this also in an interesting way. So does Shankara. They have just very brief little commentaries on this because it's more just kind of understanding these types of food. It's sometimes even medicinally in Ayurveda you have these things that are fit all of these to the extreme, but they're medicine. It's a medicine that's different than food, you know? And also, it has to be extreme. I mean, to have salt, there's nothing wrong with having salt. There's nothing wrong with having, you know, some lemon or something like that in proportion. It has to be extreme. And so when these extreme foods are what you're attracted to, then that's very rajasic. And those type of foods are not good for you physically. And they're also not good for your mind. They're agitating. They're not good for your body, they're not good for your mind. So he makes that point that you have to take that ati, because otherwise you wouldn't say that something that is bitter, like what about bitter gourd?
Ugh.
Bitter gourd's bitter. Yeah, but bitter gourd's really good for you also, you know. So these type of things, they're just pointing out. And they have to be extreme. And it is those extreme tastes that are very, very pleasing to people who are more rajasic. But they're something that give dukkha and shoka and amaya, illness.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So they make you agitated and unhappy, you know, and sick and sad. So they're not to your benefit. So these type of foods, let's say if you, that happens to be the type of food that you enjoy, you might try changing your diet. Really, seriously, just try changing your diet. Go to more sattvic type foods or go to less extreme and see how your body handles it, what happens to your body. So what they're saying is avoid these foods. Avoid these foods because they're not good for your body and they're not good for your mind. So, and yet we can become addicted to foods. You can grow up, say you can grow up in a culture as we have. I consider it kind of a Rakshasa culture. Where you grow up being fed from childhood certain types of foods, you know, certain types of foods, certain types of flavors. You can get addicted to that. That's where you can be just food,
mm-hmm.
you know, and you can become more and more extreme. And all the while you're becoming more and more rajasic, your system is not doing well with it because the food is not really meant to be food.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes in this country we eat food. What we think is food that is not meant to be food. It's not meant to be eaten. But we don't know that because we've been eating it for centuries. Even though it's not really food, you know. And so our body is not doing well with eating foods that are not meant to be foods. Or eating things that are sweeteners and various things that are actually toxic. Sugar, for example. Just a simple thing like sugar. Completely toxic. A lot of studies have been done on that. So even studies, So just a, this is just a little aside. I won't get too much into it, so don't worry. Just a little study looking at the teeth and the gums of animals, wild animals, you know, who have just eaten their natural foods that they're attracted to. And if you look at their teeth, they don't brush their, why they did this with on animals, with animals, is animals don't brush their teeth. So, these animals that have lived naturally, eating normal, their normal foods, their teeth are completely healthy. Their gums are tight, you know. Their teeth are clean and strong, not filled with cavities. You know, but humans can be like that too. If you look at animals that have eaten, been given the wrong kinds of foods, that, you know, like what we've done to animals, so you look at their teeth, their gums, they're rotten, just like human teeth. Or the gums, gum disease, and all of this kind of stuff. We have to brush our teeth, we have to do this with our teeth, we have to do that with our teeth, we have to go to the dentist, we have to do all of these things just to try to save our teeth, which shouldn't need saving if we were eating the proper foods. But we don't even know that. We don't even know what proper foods are anymore because so many centuries have gone by that many, many of the foods that we eat are absolutely wrong for you, but we think they're good for us. So, but very sad. So this is something that is even analyzing all of this back centuries and centuries ago, which is interesting. Mm-hmm. These type of foods really are not good for you. These are the foods that are good for you. These are the foods that you should be attracted to. And so change your habit. These foods are so highly addictive.
Yeah.
Highly, highly addictive. So those are the rajasic foods. Let's get into the tamasic foods. Wow, they're really bad. Okay.
Nope. I hope raviolis are in this.
Leave the sugar out. Yata yamam gatarasam. Yata yamam gatarasam. Puti puti parayushitam chayat.
Puti parayushitam chayat.
Uchishtam apicho cha medyam. Uchishtam apichamityam bhojanam tamasapriyam bhojanam tamasapriyam yata yamam gata rasam puti paryushitam chayat uchishtam api cha amedyam bhojanam tamasap. Okay. Yata yamam is actually a phrase that is used. Let's see how it goes. Like a yama is a length of time. It's like there's like four muhurtas, I think, four sets of 48 minutes. It's a little bit more than 3 hours. So yata yamam is, you can think of food that for whom 3 hours have passed. In India, you know, they don't have any refrigerators. So, and it's hot. And so if you've had your meal, and then the food has sat there for 3 hours, by that time all kinds of bacteria has formed, and the food is really not edible. So that's the major meaning for yata yamam. Another meaning that I don't quite understand how this meaning works, but Swamiji talks about it, and so does Shankara. At least I know the meaning of it is mandapakvam. Means that which has not been cooked enough. So there's some other way of breaking this yata yamam down that means manda pakvam. Pakvam means that which has been cooked. Mm. Manda means just a little, not enough. Mm. So it hasn't been cooked enough, and so therefore it can be something that can cause disease or problem. In India also, you know, if we take that meaning, that both meanings are true, because the food, water has to be boiled long enough, the food has to be cooked enough in order to kill all the germs and the bacteria and the parasites and all of that type of thing. So to eat food or even have yogurt that hasn't been boiled for long enough, all of that is very dangerous, actually. So that's on the one hand. On the other hand, if you have a good meal, but then it's 3 hours old, over 3 hours old, by that time so much bacteria has developed in the food because it's a tropical country. So food that has not been cooked well enough, or food that is over three hours old. Or gata rasam, food whose rasa, whose like essence, whose just juice but also life force has gone. So if you say gata rasam, the life force is gone out of that food. So that food is also stay away. Then puti. Puti means it smells.
The word just
it's the word smells, right? It's P-U. That's the word that makes me puti. So it's word food that smells very, very like putrid. It's putrid, puti. Parayushitam, it means food that has stayed overnight. The day old food. Similar to yatayamam, but yamam. But here, paryushitam, it's overnight food that stayed overnight. These type of foods, and then it goes in the second line. Uchishtam. Uchishtam are leftovers. Like leftovers can be, if somebody has eaten some food, left some food on their plate, then that type of remaining food is not meant for you to eat. Mm-hmm. It's considered really a saucham, very impure. So what is interesting about that is something you never do. You never eat the food left over off somebody else's plate. Except for the guru. Except for the guru. Because the guru's food, whatever is left, is viewed as Ishwara Prasad. You know? And so people, and they used to always do that, the people in when Swamiji would eat, then whatever was left, they would all take some as Prasad. Often, not all the time, but often. Because it's considered Prasadam. But what they're taking is what is something that you would never do toward another person, you do toward the guru. It's kind of an honor, as viewing him as Ishwara. So that, but anyway, here they're not talking about the guru. We're talking about tamasic people. You shouldn't just eat off of other people's plate or eat old, used food. Food that's been used by somebody else. You don't do that.
Uchishtam. Parents eating their kids' food.
Ah, okay, yeah. Uchishtam api. And then... and then Amedyam. Amedyam is food that you cannot would not offer to the Lord. Mm. So if the food, you know, is something that can't be offered to the Lord, say in puja, if you're doing a puja, you make an offering to the Lord. If that food is not worthy of being offered to the Lord, then that food shouldn't be eaten. It's unclean food. Okay? So amedyam, it's not worthy of offering. It's not something that can be offered. Which is what that makes me think of, not so much in terms of food, but when we're doing, say, a puja, or you're making an offering to the Lord when a ritual is being done, and you offer flowers, whether it be to the guru or to the Lord, or actually even to a person, if you're offering flowers, but mostly to the guru, to the Lord, you shouldn't smell them. Because if you've smelled them, you've already used them. You know, you've taken the fruit of that flower, and so you never smell the flowers that you're offering because then you're taking the gift for yourself and giving the leftovers of it somehow. Mm-hmm. So that's very real in India. You should never do that, you know, let alone eat the food and then offer it. You eat the food and then offer it to Bhagawan as part of the ritual. You would offer it to Bhagawan, offer the flowers, and then Bhagawan gives it back to you. You know, that's supposed to work. So it's bhojanam, this type of food that is tamasa priyam, is something that is loved or wanted by people who are tamasic. Yeah. You know, I think more and more, so many people are starting to realize that the food that you should be eating, that what is really food is food that is fresh, real food that you're cooking and eating. You know, that's becoming more conscious of that than all of these canned foods and all these packaged foods and all this stuff.
Processed
food that's called food, but it really isn't food. It's not really food at all. And it's also tainted with so many chemicals that are meant to enhance the flavor. And it's amazing. You just look on the label. You look. If there's a label you should look at, maybe you shouldn't buy that thing. If it's got a label that gives you that list of ingredients, maybe you should, you know, forego that, you know, so, to start taking it more seriously. Just because it's getting, the problem's getting more and more and more and more in terms of the amount of toxins and the kind of the dead food that we're eating. We're eating food that's not food. So it's a good thing to... To at least become conscious of it and know that it does affect your body and it affects your mind. You know? And so it's good to be conscious of it and change your diet. Yeah. One thing, another thing is that people aren't willing to really change their diet because they're addicted to the food that they're eating. Food is highly, highly addictive. And we get so much pleasure from food. And so the thought of changing your diet is very hard until you do it. Once you do it, after you've changed your diet, if you give yourself a week or so to come off of the addiction, then whatever that food was that you're addicted to doesn't hold you anymore. And so it's not an easy thing to do because food is so pleasurable and so, you know, the whole culture, all cultures, I think, kind of rotate around food. You know, it's the greatest entertainment. All five sense organs are involved when you're eating food. You know, food and food and drink, the whole thing I'm talking about. And so people don't want to hear about it. They really don't. Really don't want to hear that the food that they're eating is not food, not meant to be eaten, because that's so much pleasure, seeming pleasure, tamasic pleasure, and rajasic pleasure is gained from the eating of that food. You know? And so you have to have some incredible motivation to give it up and go to a better type of food. This incredible motivation. You have to have a real reason for it or you will not do it. You know, because you're addicted to that food and you gain pleasure from it and social pleasure and all of that. So food is a great, great... there's two great types of tapas. One is vak tapas. There's these two. One is vak tapas. And then the tapas is ahara, the tapas around food. Food. Vak is speech. Speech and food. We talk all the time and we eat all the time. Okay. So, and we, talking is enjoyable also, because so look at what's involved in talking, in speech. Our connections with each other, you know. So speech is pleasurable. Our talking is pleasurable. And it's also how we release our emotions is all through speech, you know. And so putting some tapas, some austerities, some spiritual discipline on speech is not easy, you know. Especially if you take it seriously. So one of the greatest ways to do a vak tapas is to spend 3 days not speaking at all. Because then you don't, you've just gone cold turkey. Oh, no speech at all. No speech. And then what happens is that you get the strength, you develop some strength to not speak. You get some strength over your speech. And what you notice happening is all of this stuff that really should not be said is coming up to your mouth and it being stopped. Stupid stuff. Gossipy stuff. Garbage. Nonsense. Meaningless stuff that need not be said at all. But because you've done the vak tapas, say you've done it for 3 days, at the ashram we used to do it for like 3 days. all of a sudden speech is no longer something, you lose your addiction to speech because you're not allowed to speak at all. And then after that, it becomes easier to make a decision that what I'm going to say, what I'm going to say is going to be satyam, hitam, and priyam. Satyam means I'm not going to say anything if it isn't true. It must be true. No lies. It must be true. Okay? But I'm not going to say what is true if it's not useful, hitam, if it's not beneficial, if it's not helpful. It's like, what if I say, my tapas is this. Whatever I say is true, and as long as it's true, I can say it. No. It must be true. It must be true. But it must be hitam. It must be beneficial, helpful. You know? And if it's satyam and hitam, it's true and it's beneficial, but it's not priyam, then you can't say it. Priyam means it's loving, it's caring, it's pleasing. Because think about it. So what you say, this is what you're allowed to say. It can be true. It should be true. It should be beneficial. You know, it should be beneficial, helpful. You know, and it should be pleasing, not hurtful. Okay. So, what? Now think about it. Who that you know has given you permission to say things to you which are not beneficial and not pleasing? Now go ahead. You should say, you know, lie to me and say things that are not beneficial at all and that are hurtful. Go ahead. That's fine. It's not fine. Who says it's fine? Nobody. It's not fine. You know? Nobody wants it. Nobody wants that. So the only leeway they gave for it, everything has to be satyam and hitam that you say, and it can be maybe not so pleasing if it's coming from your guru or it's coming from your parents. You know? Your teachers or your parents. Your guru means, that's only if they're your guru. You're the one that decides if somebody's your guru. If that guru-sishya relationship is there, that means you're involved in that. You, that person you accept as your teacher, and that teacher has accepted you as the student. And so then maybe everything they say, they can say it as gently as possible, but maybe it's not exactly what you want to hear. You know? But it's in your best interest. But there's permission there, because that guru-sishya relationship is there. But what if the person thinks they're your guru and everybody's guru? And so they take that license to just throw out, all drop all of these bombs. And people who don't, they don't take them to be the guru, their teacher. That's a totally inappropriate. Then, so, guru means that person is the one who removes ignorance for you. And you want that. You have some, there's some trust involved there. And parents. You know, parents have what they say should be true. It should be hitam. And, you know, sometimes the child doesn't want to hear that they can't go out tonight and stay out till midnight or 3 a.m. or whatever it is. Or no, they can't have alcohol at their party. I'm sorry. You know, whatever. Whatever it happens to be. No, they can't do this. And no, they can't do that. It's very hurtful because they want to do it so badly. Right? But there's a relationship there, and it's an organic, it is a relationship that's that they're born into. Right? And so parents and teachers, that priyam aspect, you know, is a little wobbly there. Not wobbly exactly, but you know, it's not always priyam. But now, think of all of the other people you know. Where is the permission to be unkind? To lie, to say things that aren't helpful at all. Where's the permission? You know? So, satyam, hitam, priyam is considered one of the greatest sadhanas, literally, for antakarna shuddhi. Because if you can control your speech, your mind follows. Your mind becomes controlled by controlling the speech. So, that's that vaktapas. Difficult to do because we always talk. they're always talking. And so that's a makes you very alert. What about food? Food also, we're always eating at least 3 meals a day, and then of course we have all of our snacks and everything else, and we use food because it takes all 5 sense organs. When you're eating, all 5 sense organs are involved, and so food is a relief. It's a joy, it's a pleasure, right? And so what if, and it's also social. And so what if, say, you've decided to only eat certain foods? Only eat certain. There's only certain foods that you eat because they're the sattvic foods, and they're foods that you can feel good about eating. You can feel dharmic and clean and moral about eating these foods. So you make that commitment. Then what happens when you go out to a restaurant with your friends and there's nothing on the menu for you? What do you do then? Then you think, I'm not going to make those kind of commitments. I'm not going to make those kind of commitments because what will I do when I go to the restaurant with my friends? You know? Going to the restaurant with my friends is more important than eating food that I believe and I feel morally are appropriate to eat. See what I mean? So there's initially some sort of sacrifice involved there. You know, there's a sacrifice. People aren't willing to make the sacrifice until they are. But when you make that sacrifice, you become stronger. So this food tapas, these are great, great tapas. The tapas around food, the tapas around speech for Antakarana Shuddhi. Antakarana Shuddhi means a mind that is really under your control. You know, a mind that is under your control. It's a beautiful thing to have a mind that is under your control. So just to talk just for a moment about that. A mind that is under your control has both shama and dhamma. Shama and dhamma. Shama means the thoughts that come into the mind are not bothersome to you. You know? If there's a thought that you dislike, you can let it go. Say a thought that's problematic, you can just let it go. You have that control to say yes or no to the thoughts. An emotion comes, it's not emotion, you have the option of dealing with that particular emotion in a number of ways. You have an option. That's shama. Dhamma, that option isn't there. The shama option is not there. The mind, whatever the thought is, or the mood, or the emotion, comes in and explodes in your mind. Okay? Now there's not a question of shama. The emotion has overwhelmed you. You know, or the perseverating, you know, circular thinking, where if something's on your mind and you can't get rid of it, that type of thing. Then dhamma comes in. And dhamma is where you're able to contain that thought or that emotion. You're able to contain it, to be with it, to neutralize it, to keep it with yourself rather than acting out. It's a thought or a feeling or a mood that is overwhelming you, but not to the point that it becomes splayed onto other people. That's dhamma. And so we all come to this knowledge, to this teaching, with a certain amount of shama and a certain amount of dhamma. You can't say, I have no shama. That's not true. I have no dhamma means whatever happens in my mind, that's what I do. No. Everybody has shama and has dhamma to some degree. And so it's the becoming conscious of these two qualities, you know, so that you can work with them. You can work with them because you know about them. It's important to know about them because you can see when your mind is getting overwhelmed. Now there's such a thing as an overwhelmed mind, right? Mm-hmm. Instead of just being overwhelmed, now you can say my mind is overwhelmed. When my mind is overwhelmed, I can do this, this, and this. That's a beautiful thing. When dhamma, if I know about dhamma, then my mind is overwhelmed and I feel like beating that guy to a pulp, But let me practice Dhamma. Let me be able to contain this. Let me take a walk. It's like anger management. It's emotional management. When your mind is, you know, overwhelming you, then do you go for acting it out? Or do you say, okay, I am totally overwhelmed. Let me do this, this, and this. In anger management, they have a list of things, you know. First, let me take 10 deep breaths. Before I say anything, let me take a walk, let me leave for 10 minutes. That type of, just, you know, they're just, but you know what? These are skills. They're skills. You have a list of skills, of things that you do. And as you practice these skills, your mind becomes strong. It's probably like training a dog. You know, the manas, not the buddhi. The buddhi needs to have, say if you have a dog, you know, the dog needs to be trained. You have to know how to train the dog in a way that the dog can understand, mm-hmm. right? And then if you know how to do that, you're training this dog, you know what you're doing, and then the dog understands it, and it can learn. You may have to do it over and over and over again for however long it takes, but the dog can learn because you have the tools. What if you have no tools? You have no idea how to train your dog. You have no idea. He just runs ragged. He runs you all over the place. The mind can be like that too. You have no idea. First of all, you have no idea how to train it, but you may even have no idea that it shouldn't be trained. No idea that it should be trained. That it's actually, the mind is actually something that can be worked with, that can be helped, that can learn certain disciplines and enjoy the tremendous freedom that it gives. We don't even know that we can do that. And then if we discover that we can do that, then we need to learn the appropriate tools to be able to do that. You know? And then we have these tools that we can use to really, really help the mind enjoy a relative shanti, a relative strength. And those are the Shama Dhamma Upadati, this whole series, the Samadhi Shatka, this group of six qualifications. All that does is give the mind kind of a relative strength, which we have to start somewhere with whatever however our mind is, we start, and we learn the tools to develop that relative strength to give it what it needs to be able to gain this knowledge. To be able to gain this knowledge, the mind has to have a relative shanti, you know, kind of a relative being. You have some control over it. You know? It's relatively available to this knowledge. That's why so much emphasis is put on all of these type of qualities. And so here, this is exactly what Krishna is doing here. He's showing you all of these things so that you can have the tools. Now, in terms of food, you can have the tools, you know, to help you gain a mind that enjoys sattva. And so say you're, as we're going through this, you're saying, oh, wow, well, I do eat extremely hot food all the time, or whatever, you know. Or I am eating a lot of tamasic-type food. Then let's change it. The thing is, this is another thing. If you're, for once you're a mumukshu, which you don't have much control over that, you're a mumukshu or you're not. But once as you become a mumukshu, then what is for a mumukshu, what makes a person a mumukshu is that what is primary for that person is gaining knowledge, getting self-knowledge. That is what's primary. And we don't even say gaining, it starts with gaining liberation, realizing that, you know, there's no way I can attain that wholeness from the world. It is not possible by the nature of the world. Everything is in flux. I'm just going to ride the flux. There is nothing constant here. There just isn't. You can't change the creation to make it as though there is something constant here. There is not. And so to gain any type of stability is not possible in the world. The closest you can come really is Dharma. By following Dharma, you gain a stable a relatively stable shanti, but you have to practice Dharma. You have to keep on your toes practicing Dharma. The Atma, the self, doesn't need any practice. The self is free, period. It's an absolute shanti. It's an absolute wholeness, an absolute freedom. But that self has to be recognized. It's you're here. You're absolutely here. You're absolutely free. But the mind is lost in this samsara. And it's drowning in this rajas and tamas. Right? And we need to pull all of that back to give the mind some dharma, some peace, so that it's available for this knowledge. That's why he's going through all. Food is important. You know? What you eat is important. You know? And what does it mean to give up food that is not food? What is it? What would it mean for you to eat the foods that offer themselves to you freely to be eaten? Vegetables and plants, you know?
And seeds.
Seeds and things that are sattvic type foods. Fruits, good foods. What does it mean to eat those foods that offer themselves to you to be eaten? It's a huge thing. It changes your psyche. It changes your psyche. We're living in darkness. This is Kali Yuga. We're living in a Rakshasa world. The Rakshasas and Tamasic world. That's the fact of it. And you have to rise above that world. You have to say no to a lot of things. And as you say no to these things, you feel so clean inside. You feel so good inside. But you have to have knowledge. You have to have understanding to even think about doing that. We don't know. We don't even know to do it. And then when you know to do it, then you're addicted. So you're addicted to some of these wrong things. And then it takes a lot of strength to say no. But when you say no, then you feel good inside. So that is the food. Now, next time we'll do next time we'll do the next one.
What's we'll the do next the rituals one? Next?
We'll do the rituals next. Yeah. Okay.
Let's take a moment.
Swasti prajagat paripalintam nyayena margena mahim mahishaha go brahmane bhyashubhamastu nityam loka samasta sukhino bhavantu kale varshatu parjanyah prithivi sasya shalini desho yamksho varahitah Brahmana santu nirbhayaha Om sarve bhavantu sukhinaha Sarve Santuniramayaha, Sarve Padrani Pashyantu, Ma Kaschid Dukkabhag Bhavet, Asatoma Satgamaya, Tamasoma Jyotirgamaya, Mrityorma Amritam Gamaya, Om Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vasishyate. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Hari Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha. Hari Om.
I don't feel good every time we talk about this vegetarian thing, you know, because I am trying to stop eating some chicken, you know, some fish, but I did stop smoking cigarettes when I went to the ashram first, so maybe I'm okay now.
Because you have to work on it.
Yeah.
You have to work on it. A lot of people have a conviction that's been, I think, has been brainwashed, actually. Thinking the need is something necessary, just like you need milk for your bones. To have strong bones, you must drink your milk. You know, and I got that all growing up. We all totally believed it. And that meat is something you have to eat. If you don't eat meat, you should at least have eggs because you need that protein, you know. But the more you study and look into it, this is not true. It's not as though you don't get plenty of protein from plants. Oh, but I've been eating meat all my life, and so my body doesn't know how to digest protein. This is all, I think it's hogwash. I don't believe any of it. I think it's all lies. It's all lies. So, but we're brainwashed completely. And there's plenty of protein. There's plenty of protein in plants and in certain types of grains if you really study. So, but you might feel that you have to slowly convert over. Whatever, it's fine. Or when however long it takes, however long it takes, the effort should be. You can make the effort. That's what I feel.
And then the other thing is, I mean. I don't have any problem not eating that food like that. Make that spicy, and that it's like pungent and that's bitter. I don't have that problem eating that food. I'm not drawn to that food.
It says extreme. Say that's you're always eating those extreme foods, and that's the type of food that you love.
Yeah.
And that's all you eat. Then you might try to pull it back a little bit. I don't have a problem eating it either, but what if that's all I ate?
But I just wonder whether it's a question of the more that we find a relative shanti to cultivating peace, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we're available for the knowledge. I wonder if you're just drawn to that anyway, then.
That could be true, but you know what? This to me is something so valuable that, you know, in pranayama. So many thousands of years ago, they discovered a real relationship between the mind and the breath, right? And so what they learned is that is if your mind is really upset, your breath is also upset, deep breathing and all of that, because of it follows the mind. But if you reverse it, the mind also follows the breath. And so say if you find yourself really upset, you can change your breath, which will change your mind. So it works both ways. So like that, say, as you become more sattvic, you're drawn more towards sattvic food. Okay? But also, if you change the food, that changes, makes the mind and body more sattvic. So there can be, both can help, you know?
You're right. So you can do both.
You can do both.
Today there was a World Cup, and I happened, you know, this big soccer match.
Mm-hmm.
And I happened to be downtown, and I was walking by a place where they were, all these Brazilian people were there, and they were cheering. They were so happy that it was loud and all that. But I was thinking that it's like, it's also certain, like experience is rajasic. So that's kind of an example to me of like, it's kind of like, when you get all worked up, excited about these sports games, sometimes, it, you know, like it promotes this kind of. It's also a form of rajasic food in a way.
I don't know if I agree with that, because I think sports can be fun and you can get really excited and have a lot of fun, and then you can let that go, you know.
So yeah, that wasn't a good game anyway. I saw it,
but. But anyway, food's an important thing, and becoming a vegetarian or vegan, you really, in the end, you have to become vegan, in the end, I think. And the reason for that is the suffering of the animals. At some point, it becomes a moral issue. Once you wake up to what is actually happening, it becomes a moral issue. And then when it becomes a moral issue for you, then it's much easier to give up. But I think for a lot, for most of us, and I conclude myself in that, for so many years, you're kept away from recognizing it as a moral issue, because everything is, you're not out there killing the chickens. You're not killing the chickens, and you're not seeing how the chickens are killed. You have no idea really what's going on, because they don't let you know. You don't know what's going on with the cows whose babies are taken away from them after 3 days, and how they're screaming and crying and moaning, how these animals are being absolutely cruelly tortured, and they don't want to die. They don't want to die. They want to live. They have families. They have loved ones. They have friends. They have emotions. They care. They care for each other. There's so many studies that have been done. They teach each other. They're conscious, living beings who would like to live. And somehow we think we have been brainwashed. This is what I mean. It's a rakshasa culture, into just thinking it's fine. There, it's fine for us to kill all of these animals and eat them, as though they're commodities or something. It's just so totally not true. It is not fine. It's the most dark, adharmic thing that they're...
Barbaric.
It's barbaric. Yeah. It's absolutely barbaric, but we have been born into a barbaric culture. And we have all kinds of rationalizations around this, and we're totally blinded to what is actually going on. And once you start knowing what's actually going on, you can't continue. But we've been so carefully protected from knowing what's going on. And then you're addicted to all of these foods that the culture provides with you. You're totally addicted to it. And so you also don't want to know what's going on, because it's too big of a change. It's a big thing, you know. But as you know, then you will change. And there's enough people who are committed now to making sure that everybody knows, which I think is correct. People should be committed to making people know what is actually going on, what you're actually participating in, so that you aren't kept in this kind of rakshasa ignorance, kept in this dark, dark ignorance.
I had that experience this year living in Bali by the most famous roasting pig restaurant in the town, and thousands of people were coming every day to eat at it, but I could hear the pigs being brought to the hill in the night, and
oh my God.
And then hearing, and I wanted everybody who went to that restaurant to be where I was.
To know,
because how could you, and they would come out of this restaurant, and they were from China and Hungary and everywhere, you know, France, I mean, it was like all these different people from all over the world, mm-hmm. They'd come out of this restaurant and they'd be like staggering. They'd be like, they'd have this kind of stupefied look
then I went through all kinds of changes about it, and like, who am I to judge, and all this kind of stuff. But I've done some writing about it, because I had stayed 2 months. So every day at 4:30 in the morning, that's when I dispatched the pigs. And the pain, because the pigs would come in the evening, and they'd be all happy piggy noises, but the noise they would make was very different.
Oh, yeah.
Very different.
Yeah.
And the other thing I wanted to say is that when I got introduced to Ayurveda, and I got told these are the foods you should eat, blah, 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 I had this reaction. Well, what am I going to eat now? You've taken away everything. But I changed, and now I don't miss those.
Yeah, that's the thing. Once you break out of the addiction, you don't need those foods at all. Or do you want them?
I don't want them.
Yeah, that's the thing, but we don't know that.
Well, they're not seen as food anymore.
Well, once you break an addiction, then you have a choice. When you're not, when you're addicted, you can't see. Yeah.
You know, this whole topic of just brings up such massive issues for people.
You know, I know. Massive issues.
I mean, when you talk about speech, tapas, room is fairly shanti. When you talk about ahara tapas, it's like, you know, and there are several movies and documentaries that are out, like on Hulu, about
I've seen most of them.
Veganism and then what is actually happening to the animals.
Mm-hmm.
They don't let citizens go to see how the animals are actually raised. You can't go in there.
You can't.
You know, unless you work there.
Yeah, they've made it a crime. And we've become terrorists.
It's a terrorist.
We're called terrorists now. Activists.
Yeah.
The people who are activists against this are considered terrorists.
And,
they've been labeled that now.
So, I used to be vegetarian and pretty much vegan, and then for certain reasons I started eating meat, and so then we watched one of those videos. I already know what's going on in factory farming, but after watching the video, I just started crying. I mean, I was weeping. It was just so intense. Just, you know, people secretly at their own risk of their life took these videos arrested.
Yeah.
You know, and thrown in prison for videoing what's going on.
Yeah, it's a crime.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, right. You're not supposed to show people. And so there's these secret videos where this woman had made this documentary, and I just was weeping afterwards and said, I said to Jackie, I have to be vegan now. But I didn't. But anyway, I don't know why I'm saying this. It's just expressing myself.
I've got condemn me for eating meat.
I'm not condemning anybody.
Oh, thanks.
Well, he says at the end of the paragraph that if you are eating tamasic food, it doesn't absolutely make you tamasic. It's an influence.
Yeah, that's what Swamiji says.
Yeah. So he said we shouldn't judge people who are eating foods in our society.
Yeah,
well, Swamiji also has to say,
it's not about condemning, because we're all born in a Raja. In a country of Rakshasa values. Yeah. It's true. Generations of it. And so you're born in the soup, but somehow you have to get out of it. And you take your time. Everybody has their own time. But as you become more conscious of this, I'm telling you, it becomes a moral issue for you. And you have to say no. You'll be forced into that position. It might take you a while. You'll be forced into that position because it's adharmic. It's wrong. I'm sorry. It is. I really regret every bite of meat I've ever had. I regret any yogurt or ghee or milk I have ever tasted. I want nothing to do with it. I wish I never had anything to do with it ever in my life. I'm sorry. I feel sorry. I'm sorry about it, really. I wish it had never happened. I wish I'd never.
But you were totally ignorant. I mean, that was.
Yeah, but it's true. But you know, the ignorance is so deep. It's so deep that it takes some time before it enters your heart. You can kind of know, but you don't let yourself know the truth. You think you kind of know, but you're still defended against it because it's such a thick, thick thing that you're, and your mind doesn't want to know. It doesn't want to know. So there as it comes a time when it enters your heart and then you can't do it. That's what I'm...
Part of this is to do with our generation, where we are in time. You know, things were different for our grandparents in a more agrarian kind of culture. Things were a little bit different. I mean, they did know where their meat came from.
Yeah.
And you can judge it, you know, if it's wrong or not, but it wasn't necessarily factory farming, which I'm not implying makes it right. But I think there was more of a knowledge of it. And as we've
yeah, I think that the factory farming is so horrific that it makes all of us have to look at it. And then once you start looking at it, even if it's organic, like our grandparents used to do farming, the fact still remains that those animals don't want to die. Mm-mm. They don't want to die. And you know what? You don't need to eat them. You're fine without eating them. You don't need to eat them. You need to eat, but you don't need to eat animals.
Well, you've talked like this many times throughout the years I've been with you. And each time there's a defensiveness that comes up.
Oh, you ought to say it at school.
But I notice, though, but I do notice that each time that I have that interaction with you around that food thing, is I notice that, like, each time something gets chipped away in ignorance, gets chipped away. So, you know, I'm fine doing what I'm doing with my guru's grace.
Yeah. I'm fine too.
Would you like us to talk about it every week?
No, then I would walk out because nobody else eats meat.
You can't imagine how sometimes this comes up at school. That is so bad.
Well, it came up here once.
It came up here once. Oh, it was really bad.
Yeah, I still remember.
We'll never forget it.
Yeah,
when this issue comes
Carl
up.
Was it was difficult. Here, remember?
Yeah.
Yeah,
and Hasso.
Hasso, yeah, I remember so clearly. Oh, yeah.
So I'm pretty much on board with the program, mm-hmm. although I wasn't even that night. I was.
Yeah.
but, you know, I've been educated in some ways, and it's changed my life. But still, there's just a couple of like more technical things that I have questions about in these verses, and like one of them's in the sattvic foods, the oily, creamy stuff. If I eat a lot of that, I just makes me sleepy and slows me down. And I don't eat as much oil as I used to, and I feel so much better. So I'm kind of wondering, you know, how that fits
in. Well, I had the same question, that really wondering and Swamiji didn't go into much. What do they mean by that snigdha? Snigdha does mean oily. So what, oily or creamy? So what they're talking about, I don't know.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think it has something to do with Ayurveda.
Yeah, it's like, all these things are just straight out. I mean, Ayurveda, it was so helpful to me to hear it because... In 4 years of doing it, in 3 trips to the Ayurveda hospital, I've been told, eat this, don't eat that. And now I see it comes straight from this.
So, these are the sattvic foods, these are the rajas foods,
And I think that, at least in Ayurveda, ghee is a very important element.
Ghee is very important in Ayurveda. So is dairy. That's why it took me a long time before I became really, instead of just vegetarian, became vegan, because I always thought of milk, dairy, and
warm dairy in the Ayurveda,
And ghee is so important.
Important, and that's where I think the oily, you know, like you have to put ghee in it.
Ghee.
I think that's
right. I would agree.
I mean,
ghee and milk and yogurt would be snake.
Not yogurt, though.
Not yogurt?
Buttermilk, no yogurt. It's funny, and no vinegar. And that thing where it said don't have the salad, that's like, no, keep away from vinegar. Mm-hmm. And I was going, what?
The thing is that when you get used to a certain food and somebody tells you don't eat that food, they're just talking. You get angry. That's what happens. You get angry about hearing that.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't even have to be in a class. You can just be sitting in a restaurant and your friends are talking, you know? And, like, for instance, when I was vegetarian, everyone would always ask me for some reason what I was eating. It just would always come up. They don't now that I'm not.
Yeah.
Just sit down and say, hey, what do you eat? I guess, anyway. And so then I would say this and this and this and that. Oh, I could never do that. And it became their issue, but they asked me. Then they would preach about why they couldn't do it and just freak them out.
Yeah. And, no, it's really just, a hot topic. Yeah. Totally hot topic.
You know?
and
it's like your body wants to yell out against it or something.
Or that it doesn't like
whatever.
Raw food.
Yeah.
And here in California, that's like... So there's a lot of issues around just what's really...
And in Ayurveda, the only time that meat products are allowed is if a person is wasting away and they're like literally
and it's being
dying.
Used medicinally.
Yes, medicinally.
Never
and they
is
make
food.
Meat broth.
But those folks down in Mongeret ate goats.
Where?
Down at the Ayurveda hospital that, you know, near Coimbatore. Mm-hmm. They like goats.
Okay.
But
the three qualities of speech that
Satyam, Hityam, and Priyam.
It seems to me that if you're having like a problem with somebody, if you're having an argument, and you had to express what you felt, that's not going to be pleasing to them, but it's necessary to like resolve something, right?
I think sometimes we think that, but I don't think it's necessarily true. I think sometimes, actually, when you're in having tension with somebody, that once you get beyond your anger, then you can actually say what's bothering you in a way that is not hurtful. You can actually have a meaningful conversation. Whereas when you're really revved up and angry, then what you're saying is usually hurtful.
Yeah, but
you think that it's necessary to be hurtful in order to show how you feel.
But even if it's not what they want to hear, it's going to be not pleasing to them, even if it's not coming from a place of like aggression or anger. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, well, maybe that's in. I do know what you mean. I think it depends on how you say it. And also you're in an intimate relationship where those boundaries are there between you, what is acceptable for the two of you because of the intimacy in the relationship.
When I was thinking about the question to ask you, I was thinking like in those moments it's almost like both of you are teachers in some way for the other person. Like you're kind of...
Or you both have given each other permission to talk on that level.
Yeah.
But still, I think in a relationship, you can talk on a very intimate level and say things that are not pleasing, but you can say them in a way that is pleasing.
Yeah.
You can say hard things in a way that is pleasing. Yeah, and I think that that's much more helpful. And there's much more growth that takes place when you're able to do that with each other than when you're pummeling each other. I don't really think that's helpful.
No.
Try reading Nonviolent Communication.
You have it?
Yeah. I mean, when you break it down into observations, feelings, needs, and requests, you can all do that without challenging someone.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I have another one of these technical questions. So in the... the tamasic foods, the leftovers one, I'm having a reaction to that, especially like
that we have refrigerators.
Yeah, right. Mm-hmm. But I'm talking about just leftover foods that someone else has. Maybe they ate half their plate, and the food is still perfectly good, but somehow it's tainted because someone put it on their plate and decided they didn't. It was their eyes were bigger than their belly or something. But it's okay if it's the guru. That just kind of. It seems like magical thinking.
No, well, it's not magical. I don't.
Isn't it cultural?
It's really cultural, and it's also. Like, I think our rules are not quite the same just because we do have refrigeration and we do have, you know, mm-hmm. knives and forks and that type of thing. But in India, you know, they're, at least in India of old, with the heat, with no refrigeration, no antibiotics, you know, they were very, very careful even about, say for instance, the mother takes her bath in the morning and puts on her clean sari. After that, there's no touching. There's no touching. You go, why? Well, because there's germs. Mm-hmm. It's the sanitation is, the way they handle the sanitation is completely different, you know, than what we have
that.
Now.
Yeah.
And so maybe you have to think of the spirit in the spirit of things. If you take hot food and you put it in the refrigerator, it's not going to spoil. In the next day, it'll be fine, you know. But if you leave it out, and I mean, for me, if I leave some food out that I wish that I was going to put in the refrigerator, but I've left it out, then to me that food is spoiled. I've left it out, you know. It's, in fact, one of my friends, who is a science major, she did a study on food that you leave outside of the refrigerator, say hot food, and you don't put it in the refrigerator. You look at it even like 15 or 20 minutes later, and it's teeming with growths.
So, oh, goody. Yeah,
it's a, let alone 3 hours, right? So you have to, you have to, listen.
I'm thinking more of the leftovers specifically.
I don't have anything to say about that, though.
Okay.
Just take what it says and then try to bring it into the present for you.
Yeah, and it's also the whatever the life force.
People in India also, I mean, at least in South India, used to eat with their hands.
They do eat there with their hands still.
Yeah, they still do.
Well, yeah, that I can understand.
So if
they've touched it.
Yeah.
Yeah, they, well, so but we eat the hand is the
doing.
Fork.
Yeah.
That's the instrument, right? They eat with their hands. And
they don't
even
wash their hands beforehand a lot of times.
Yeah.
Even now. Yeah, they wash after.
Oh.
They're cleaning the salt after, not before.
Yeah. So.
I can't say for all Indians, but
yeah.
A few hundred that I've seen.
Anyway, I'm done. Wait, I think we've done enough.
We got through the food.
We got through the food.
No fist fights.